Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
Jamie Daniels.
Listen, we're going to be radically changing the way the Patreon works in a few months, but for now, you come in at the $1 level, the $1 level, and you get access to all of my audiobooks, right?
Right.
You get Jorek and the Shaga Steel, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Vic. You get Cotton Candy.
McHumans. Humans Under the Bed.
You get...
Computer face,
and you get Holy Matrimony. These are hours and hours and hours of audiobooks. As if that wasn't enough, only for $1, and not a dollar each. It's a dollar a month. A dollar a month gets you access to all of that, plus the Overrun episodes of our sister podcast, Watching with Strangers. We do a weekly Overrun podcast every single week. You get a new episode of that show. It's ridiculous not to jump in, help us, support the podcast. We're trying to get 20 patrons in the month of May. And I promise you, in the next couple months, it's going to be worth it. We're going to convert this over. It's going to be a book club, gang. It's going to have merch. I'm going to be giving away t-shirts and buttons and stickers and novels, exclusive novellas and books from Kevin Strange. Just get in now. Get these cool podcasts and audiobooks. And stick around, because it's going to get only better.
Right? Travis is my sister.
All right, there you go.
Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit?
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Oh, hey, gang.
Hey, y'all.
Welcome back to the 22nd episode of Reading to Strangers. My name is Kevin Strange.
And I'm Jeremy Daniels.
And, yeah, we're back to talk to you guys a little bit more for another week. We've been doing this a while now.
Yeah.
Had our nice live special a couple That's weeks true. Back.
Mm-hmm.
Had our, last week we had our special episode with Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult movies.
And that was a little vape for Travis. He likes to point it out.
That was for you, Travis. That was a little vape action. Off the air, when we recorded our Watching with Strangers podcast the other day, Travis was like, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but you can hear Jeremy vaping on the podcast. Like, it's, he openly talks about how he
sucks
on that Travis. Vape dick. No, he was just trying to be helpful, buddy.
He's, I know, just fine with him. What he doesn't know is I'm actually pushing my head down while
it's pretty hot for those who are into that kind of thing, I suppose. So what's new?
Fat dude sucking on stuff. Sure, there's a website out there.
What's new, buddy? I got a few things.
Not much, really. I've been painting little miniature plastic figures.
We finally went out and played a game of Warhammer 40K today, didn't we?
Yes, we did. The little place in the local area has some battle mats and some
terrain
pieces to play with, which you can use for free, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Vinny and I finished painting my Battle for Vedros set, which is orcs versus space marines, and I brought them over today, and we were gonna fuck with them here. We realized we didn't really have the room, so Jeremy called up the local dork squad, and it turns out that they have free tables, free battle mats, and free terrain to play with. You know, you have to keep it there. I really felt like it was flashbacks back to when I used to have to go to daycare, and they had, you know, walls and walls and walls of toys, but no love for my mother or my father.
This is true.
Did you ever have to go to daycare when you were a kid?
Nope. I had grandparents that kind of ran a daycare.
I eventually migrated to the grandparents. I couldn't deal with the daycares anymore, but I had the horrors of daycares for a while. Back in the 80s.
Yeah, it was just me and about five other cousins. That's kind of like Lord of the Flies, but instead of on an island, it was down in Grandma's basement.
Oh, so. Jesus Christ. Yeah, so we went out. We went down to the Dork Emporium and...
the nerdery, as I like to call it.
The nerdery, the Dork Emporium. We, they have like a huge gaming area in the back. What do you think, like 20 tables?
Oh, yeah, easily.
And they're all 6 foot by 4 foot fucking, or even 8 foot by 4 foot
tables. I'd say there's at least 24 tables, because I bet there's eight setups.
Yeah.
At least five.
And they had a ton of different... I didn't go over there. I'm on a bum foot right now. I don't know what I did. I fucked with my foot. And Jeremy went over and he was looking through the battle mats and the terrain. They had like five boxes of terrain. What, four or five different battle mats to choose from?
They had probably eight or nine battle maps. And the boxes of terrain, there were four next to the battle mats. All those things were terrain.
Yeah, all just
different shelves next to me.
Huge variety. And it's free. They don't charge it because we called and asked if we had to rent the tables or something. They're like, just come in and have fun, man.
Yeah.
And so... So yeah, we went. We played a nice game of Battle for Vedras, and that's my third game of Warhammer now, and my third defeat. Although I whittled down the orcs, I was the Space Marines again. I whittled down the orcs just to the War Boss and what, two knobs?
Yeah,
War Boss and two knobs. So it came down to 3 versus 1. So that's not so bad. It was my Terminator armor that tried to put up a fight there at the end and got smoked. But what else is going on?
Not much. Literally not much. I went to Tech Friday.
Tech 9?
Yeah.
Tech 9?
My daughter for her first real concert. I mean, she's been to like some other bands, but never been in like a pit. She was second person back from the front. And got to experience that craziness. She was absolutely amazed that girls show boobies.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that happens. Especially at a tech show.
Yeah, she only seen one, and she kept saying, like, did you see that one girl? I was like, yeah, I see like 12 of them.
Dang.
And that's without, like, being obvious, because this is my daughter.
You weren't in full creeper scope
mode? No, I wasn't in full.
Yeah. You didn't have the binoculars with you?
But other than that, not much, really. You got some stuff going on.
A lot of interesting things. I don't know which ones I want to get into, which ones I don't. We have a really long episode of Computer Face this week. I tried to kind of ignore the length of the episodes
and
break it down into sections, because Computer Face is told from a series of very important and telling flashbacks to Harry's, I guess, civilian life, and then his... his life as a computer face in the apocalypse. And so I was trying to cut it to where one episode takes place in the past, the one episode takes place in the apocalyptic present, and back and forth and back and forth. And by doing it that way, last week's episode was about 20 minutes. And this week's episode's a little over 30 minutes. So it's not too much longer, but we also can cut down on the fucking rambling on the talky portions here and still have a nice hour.
Well, we always have good stuff to ramble.
I mean, I have some good stuff this week, but I don't know when I want to get into it and when I don't. I guess we'll tell the first story now. And I'm naming this episode Obliterating the Buddy System, because after the break we're going to talk about a book that came out and the interesting reviews that this book is getting, and I'm going to break down why this book that came out is getting the sort of reviews that it is getting. And why it's not getting more of those kinds of reviews. So anyway, we'll talk about that after the break. But I do want to talk about this some Facebook drama. I'm still on Facebook. I planned on coming back for one weekend. And
it
then
sucked
it,
you in.
Well, then it turned into I wanted to hang out and kind of set up and promote for the live show, which was going to be about 2 weeks from the time I... originally restarted my Facebook account or went logged back into my Facebook account, and that 2 weeks came and went, and it's been about two more weeks, so I've been around about a full month, a little longer now, and it just gets silly on there.
Oh yeah,
it really does. It's nonsense.
Well, like I said, you gotta take it for the circus show it is and not take it too much to heart.
Oh man, but some people, it's all they do. Some people are there 24/7. Like I have like centuries from the Bizarro community that like sit and roost on my page just to screenshot things that I say and then fly off back, like send a raven back to the powers that be and tell them what Kevin Strange is saying.
Probably sending owls.
Sending owls. More Harry Potterish.
More
than,
Harry Potter, less Game of Thrones.
Less Game of Thrones.
I don't think you can be a sensitive social justice warrior if you and be a true Game of Thrones.
No, fan. Remember they all called it rape culture Sansa got boinked by Ramsay.
And probably sat there and masturbated when Theon got his dick cut off too. So.
Probably masturbated to the Sansa thing and then went on the internet and said that it should be banned.
It wasn't that sexy.
It really wasn't. It wasn't anything that anybody should have gotten upset about. It was really tame compared to some of the graphic things that they've shown on that show. Yeah. Anyway, so one of the many interactions that I've had on stupid Facebook that I thought particularly warranted talking about on the show here is there's this author that I've been friends with for a while, and he actually turned me on to a few YouTube personalities and podcast personalities that sort of started to tackle social justice and we're watching movies here?
There's some buds going on in the back.
Are we watching movies or are we doing podcasts?
We're doing podcasts, but there's a row of buds in the back. God, I'm only a man.
So anyway, without this dude, I would have never... Well, I don't know if I would have never... But right around the time Milo started to get real popular, there was also Dave Rubin and Sam Harris started to really make waves when Ben Affleck called him a racist for talking about Islamic extremism. Okay. And a few dudes like that. And I sort of fell down the rabbit hole in the YouTube community and started to get into those personalities and listen to their analysis about politics and social justice and all that. And so I kept in contact with this author. He's a very, very, very successful author, which is why I think what ended up happened because of the perceived success. Because not perceived success that this guy has, the success that this guy has. He's under a lot of pressure to put on that used car salesman attitude, but it's a little different from the normal type of crap we get out of the small press horror and small press bizarro. This guy writes mostly high fantasy and military sci-fi, and this is really important because the audience for military sci-fi is mostly white conservative males, and high fantasy is skews sort of all over the map, but it's more center right, center left. The high fantasy doesn't go all like we were talking about with Game of Thrones. It's not something that super social justice warriors are going to be into necessarily. So this guy doesn't have to be a bleeding heart liberal social justice warrior as a bookseller. It's okay. He can skew his social commentary and politics a little to the right, and it's okay because the military sci-fi audience that he writes for is okay with that. They probably mostly want conservative-minded posts in their Facebook news feed, and they don't mind posts about Donald Trump. They don't mind those kinds of things, and he'll still maintain his sales. And he's always sort of come in and dropped his 2 cents into posts that I make and whatnot. And as I've been pushed more and more to the right, I've never considered myself a conservative. I always considered myself a liberal-leaning libertarian, if anything. You know, I've never really considered myself. I've never been on the side. We've talked about that on this podcast before. I've never been on the side of evangelical Christians, and I've never been on the side of neoconservatives like George Bush and the neocon, you know, imperial march to conquer city-states and to, you know, impose democracy at the end of a rifle. I've never been, never supported that kind of stuff. But you get the more social justice and the extreme left pushes, the more right leaning people like us become because of those, you know, because of what they call, because of what the left calls for. You know, constant self flagellation and apologies just for being white males and things like that. You end up pushing us to the other side, right?
Usually, yeah.
So this guy, you know, he came and he's always dropped his 2 cents in for probably known the guy about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And he would send me private messages. And it was really, I never really felt like I had any kind of a personal connection with him. Because he would publicly, he would lean a little bit to the right. like I said, just enough to kind of appease his military sci-fi audience. But then privately, he would send me these like real like flagrant, did you see what the social justice warriors are doing today? And he would send me these links, and I would always notice that he would never share that stuff publicly. He'd always share it with me privately. And I always thought that that rang a little phony. Like,
yeah.
Like he was just trying to appease everybody privately and put on this like barely right center, right of center personality for the audience that he was going for. So, what, you know, long story short, guy kind of felt like a kind of a real faker. Like he was putting on this used car salesman persona just to sell books. And after this conversation that we had, and spoiler alert, at the end of this conversation, just a conversation, just a conversation like you and I would just happen to walk into. It wasn't deliberate. It wasn't planned. It was just a simple conversation that ended with him blocking me on Facebook, calling me an extremist. And what that taught me, and I'll go into a little bit about what the subject matter was, but what I learned from this was I don't think this guy is conservative in the least bit. I think this guy is a liberal that doesn't necessarily like social justice warriors, but he's a liberal who sees an opportunity to make money in the military sci-fi and high fantasy markets. So he's putting on airs and he's putting out a fake identity in order to appease a particular audience. And I don't care that that fake persona sort of aligns with my own personal beliefs. If you're a faker, you're a faker. If you're a poser, you're a poser. If you're posing to impress me or anyone else so that we buy your books because that's the you believe the demographics, you know, skew in that direction, I have no respect for you. You're just a... I want people to be real. I have friends who are... I have a friend that I've been friends with since like 2000 on the internet, this chick. And she has evolved over time into one of the most douchey social justice warriors I've ever interacted with. But we've been friends for so long, I just let her douche it up. I don't argue with her. I don't fight with her. I just let her be her. And personally, we're friends because she's at least honest about it. I believe her whenever she says these ridiculous, retarded things about social justice. I think she honestly believes them. And I would rather have a friend that's an honest social justice warrior than the politics and personal ideas of which I vehemently disagree with. But I'd rather be friends with one of those people that's being honest and true. Mm-hmm. Than be friends with a faker that's claims to be libertarian or right leaning, and wants to share things with me privately that they think I'll get a kick out of, but don't actually believe those, don't actually have those social or political values themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we're like talking, and I don't know. I made a post about something. I don't even remember what it was. And
cultural appropriation,
something, maybe. I've been talking about that a lot, I guess. Yeah. I don't really care about it. Maybe it was a cultural appropriation post, I don't know. But he came in there and he was like, the extreme left and the extreme right are both problems, and you know, people should be more center minded. And my response to that, I don't know, maybe I was in a dickish mood that day. I don't know why I even responded to it. Like I said, it wasn't pre-planned. I don't have anything against this guy. Yeah, he's always kind of rang kind of phony to me, but it wasn't... I don't know this guy in real life, and I don't talk to him very often. It's not somebody I have to interact with, so I never really... There's nothing emotional about this. I just responded with what centrists are. Centrists are people who will, behind the scenes, try to make nice with both sides, but in public... sit by and watch witch burnings and public reputation executions and do nothing. It's like centrists are cowards. Centrists are the ones that don't pick sides because they're too busy trying to save their own neck. He didn't like that. He didn't like that very much, and he came firing back at me with some stuff, and somehow he drugged the conversation towards white nationalists, literal Nazis, in air quotes, and Richard Spencer. And I think I was talking about the Antifa bike lock professor, Eric, whatever his last name is, that finally ended up getting arrested, by the way, and charged with like 6 felonies. Mm. Dang!
Yeah, don't put a sock in a lock.
Well, the problem is he probably has a really rich daddy who's probably going to get a really rich lawyer.
It's going to cost a lot of money.
It's going to cost a lot of money, but I don't see a bike lock professor doing much jail time.
Assault with a deadly weapon, though.
They did throw that on him. Then people were like, well, he didn't have a gun. Like, dude, he didn't need a gun. He put a bike lock in a sock and hit a dude over the head with it. An unarmed kid.
A baseball bat is a, you know.
Assault with a deadly weapon if you hit somebody in the face with it.
Yeah.
Especially someone that's unarmed. I mean, it's all conditional based on what the... on what the situation was, and that situation was all caught on tape.
Combat. If they have a bat too,
then there might be a different.
It's still assault with a deadly weapon.
But they might, you know, it might fall under something.
It's downgraded because it's mutual combat. Because
it was mutual. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not a lawyer. But anyway, I bring up that guy, and he brings up Richard Spencer. Richard Spencer, you know, is the white nationalist, the Pepe guy, the guy that got punched in the face, the punch a Nazi meme guy. With the Pepe pen, and he brings up Richard Spencer and goes, you know, we you can't defend Richard Spencer, and I'm going, wait a minute, I'm talking about the extreme left, I'm talking about a guy who assaulted a kid with a weapon, and you're talking about a guy that gives speeches about how he wants an ethno state for white people. I was like, I don't have any problem defending Richard Spencer's right to free speech. I do have a problem defending bike lock professor's assault on an innocent kid with no weapon to defend himself with. And this guy just kept going on, oh, you're an extremist now. You're defending Nazis. I went, I'll defend anyone's right to free speech if they're not calling for violence. And to my knowledge, I've listened to Richard Spencer speeches before.
I don't want to. He may be condoning violence, but what we know of him publicly.
But privately, to my knowledge, there have been no internet forum posts or private messages from Richard Spencer that have ever said, "Let's go kill all the black people and Jews. Yeah. Let's be real Nazis." Publicly, what he says is he wants a white ethno state. I don't have to agree with that to defend his ability to say that. And that's what I kept saying to this author guy. I was like, you are. And he kept saying, like, well, I know there's a problem with the left, but you can't defend Richard Spencer. He's an asshole. And I was like, I'm not convinced you've ever actually listened to anything Richard Spencer's ever said. I think you're just freaked out and getting triggered by the fact that people call him a Nazi, and you don't want your public persona connected to these quote unquote literal Nazis. I was like, I have no problem. Defending this guy's ability to talk in public. Like, there's a Grand Canyon sized chasm between Antifa's assault with weapons and a dude who wants to talk about who wants to make stupid speeches that don't include indulging or condoning violence. And this dude goes, oh, you're an extremist. I can't associate with you anymore. And gets all triggered and crazy and blocks me from Facebook.
Which is at the end of the world.
Well, first of all, I don't care one way or the other. To me, it was like, you could just say, like, you could be like, I don't agree with you. Thanks. Goodbye. And just, you don't have to, don't comment on my posts. You don't have to talk to me. It's not that big of a deal. But the dude got so triggered and went so crazy and went all the way to those links to, like, block me and disassociate himself with me entirely, that sort of, I was like, you know what? I already was getting the impression that this dude is a liberal in libertarian clothes, that this dude is really a leftist who wants this conservative-leaning audience, so he puts on these airs that he's a libertarian that leans right just for book sales. And I was like, I didn't sweat it at all. I was like, I'm kind of glad. I kind of wish that would have happened sooner, because the guy it's kind of gross. Like, again, I don't take kindly to those fake ass people, those posers. I really don't.
Yeah. Either way, I don't like it either way, but they don't really bug me because I don't really care about them. So.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the most I've thought or talked about this guy since it happened, and that was like 2 weeks ago. So, and I probably won't talk about him ever again, but. That was one of my stories. And then, like I said, I want to talk about this book on the other side of the jump. But I think we're ready for Computer Face Part 2.
Sure.
What do you think? Do you have anything to add about that situation?
I don't know. People just get too flustered and fucked up over stupid stuff.
I think they really believe that this internet persona is, like, going to make or break them.
Well, I just don't understand why they go full out to block somebody. Because you notice that they're blocked. I mean, there's a girl that, you know, I wanted to have sex with, but wouldn't have sex with me, so I don't want to see her Facebook post, but I don't want to block her or unfriend her. You just unfollow. What's wrong with the unfollow?
Yeah, and again, I think it's this guy, like, flipped out and was like, oh my God, Kevin Strange condones Richard Spencer. That'll ruin my career if someone finds out I associate with him. Like, he's, like, taking it, like, so fucking seriously. Which isn't like
Richard Spencer's coming and playing Warhammer with us.
Right? I would like to play. I mean, you know, if he's really a Nazi, he might have some good strategy. I could, well, I guess, no, maybe not, because they lost the war, so.
They lost the war.
Maybe I want to, I'm trying to frame this. I want to play Richard Spencer in Warhammer because I'd probably win. Because he's a Nazi and Nazis lost the war.
He's trying to fight the guy on the next table, too.
Yeah.
Got two fronts going.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing going in the cold area during the winter?
Not a good war strategist, those no. Nazis. All right, so Computer Face Part 2, we finally get into the robot apocalypse.
Yay! Not some story about a dude. Nerds.com or whatever it was.
AngryDorks.com.
AngryDorks.com.
Yeah, last week we got introduced to Harry. We learned about his life before pre-apocalypse. We found out he was warned about computers gaining, androids gaining sentience, and he freaked out. And this week we learn about the computer apocalypse. The computer apocalypse. The robot apocalypse. The killer robot apocalypse. We get to meet our first retriever unit, and we get to meet our other protagonist.
Kevin Strange's Halberts before he even knew what a Halbert was.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of units, even the dreadnoughts themselves harbor human beings inside of them. So there's Warhammer machines that have people inside of them, but I had no idea that existed.
Funny about it.
Even if I did, I probably would have. Still
and you got into it right as the we were talking about doing Computer Face.
Yeah,
that's silly.
That's pretty cool. So anyway, we're gonna jump into that. We're gonna jump into Computer Face Part 2. Like I said, it is a long episode.
We even talked before about you getting into the voices. I think we did that on the live show.
Yeah. We did.
You had to cut out probably an hour's worth of. She's a black girl. She talks like this.
We get to meet that black girl that talks like this week. So, all right. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk real briefly about the buddy system and why it ruins books. See you on the other side, gang.
Yay.
This is Jeremy Maddox, host of The Quiet Place. Has anyone ever told you that you have anger issues? It's okay, because so do I. And you can hear all about them every week on The Quiet Place. That's right, baby. I have officially moved into Strangeville's neighborhood, and there will be no sacred cows or taboos on this show. Tune in to KevinTheStrange.com to hear The Quiet Place as well as reading to strangers and watching with strangers. And tell your easily triggered friends that we aim to offend.
When Computer Face woke up, he didn't yet know he was Computer Face. He didn't know anything except pain. His everything hurt. He opened his eyes. The world around him was a haze of smoke and rubble. The smell of burning wires and spilled oil assaulted his senses, making his already woozy consciousness swim. His confusion only intensified as his vision cleared and he surveyed his surroundings. He was laying in some kind of crater. Jagged pieces of rebar jutting from the concrete slabs and the remnants of pulverized possessions littered the area. Where the fuck am I? He thought, trying to sit up. The whole right side of his body burned when he tried to move it. He looked over and screamed. He was half submerged in some kind of yellow sludge. The chunky liquid seeped out of a busted pipe to his right and had pooled into a shallow puddle. Computer Face dragged himself out of it and climbed to his feet. His clothes were half burned half melted onto his flesh. He tore them off and stared down at his skin in disbelief. His massive, muscular forearms were completely discolored and glowing the strange yellow of the sludge pool, but also speckled with thick splotches of purple. His torso was stained the same way, as was his right leg and, much to his horror, his cock. His pain, however, was already subsiding. Computer Face decided he could mourn his new disfigurement later. Presently, he needed to get himself out of this hole and seek shelter. But from what? Finding foot and handholds, he busied himself with climbing out of the sludge pit. Being naked, disoriented as all hell, and still in a considerable amount of pain, made the 15-foot climb slow going. It gave him plenty of time to think, and by the time he made it to the top of the pit and rolled free of it, he'd come to several startling conclusions. He couldn't remember where he was, why the place was completely fucked, or most importantly of all, who he was. Try as he might, those details escaped him. He remembered nothing of his life, not a single event that had led up to waking up in a puddle of what was probably toxic waste, not even his own name. Lastly, as he gazed back down into the pit he'd just escaped from, he was completely convinced he'd just woken up inside a giant footprint. Wiping the dust off his still tender skin, he looked around. He stood on a street corner, that much was for sure, and by the look of all the crumbled buildings, gutted skyscrapers, and smashed up vehicles, he was in a city. Instinctively, Computer Face knew he needed to find shelter, food, and water before nightfall, although he was neither hungry nor thirsty. He looked up at the sun. It was still relatively high in the sky, but that didn't mean he had more than a few hours to find the essentials and hunker down before darkness took over the obliterated landscape. These thoughts of survival were curious to him, and as he began to walk through the city street, weaving around demolished cars and hopping over small sink pits, he wondered if he'd been a hunter or outdoorsman in the life he could no longer remember. Before long, he found himself sifting through a partially intact apartment high-rise. He stood on the ground floor, digging through what looked like a kitchen area. From the conditions of the debris and the lack of salvageable goods, Computer Face guessed that whatever catastrophe had befallen this city had happened some time ago. Maybe even a few years, judging by the decomposition of the smashed-up foodstuffs. Sighing in frustration, Computer Face moved on, stepping out of the rubble, back into the street. He took no more than 3 steps before he ran headfirst into a winded, clearly panicked woman, knocking her on her ass. She was black, with an athletic, taut body, as evidenced by the form-fitting red leather jacket and black jeans she wore, both thoroughly scuffed up and battle-damaged. Her features were tough, chiseled, but not unattractive. Her large, brown eyes complemented her lips, even though they were currently full of terror. A feminine glow radiated from her flushed and sweaty face. In fact, the only off-putting feature she possessed was an abnormally large forehead, which, upon closer inspection, revealed itself to be scarred over from an old injury. She was missing her bangs. Her thick, corded braids didn't start until almost halfway up her head. Criss-crossing keloids told the story of violence inflicted.
computer face wondered in that moment why she didn't cover her deformity. "Sorry," he said, but the woman's eyes only grew wide when she scooted backward through the rubble. "Stay the fuck away from me, machine." "Machine?" he asked, his voice sounding distant and hollow, like he was hearing it from a television instead of his mouth. The woman scrambled to her feet. "What the fuck are you? Some kind of new model?" "What? What are you talking about?" He took a step toward her. She jumped back and pulled an odd device from a bag strapped to her waist. It was a short pole wrapped in wires with what looked like an electromagnet attached to the bottom with two prongs jutting up from the top. She pushed a button and the weird baton hummed to life. "Doesn't matter how many new ways you build yourselves, you'll never kill us all. This is our world, our lives. We'll fight to the very last goddamn one of us." I seriously don't know what you mean," Computer Face said, raising his hands in a gesture of submission. I was in some kind of accident. I can't remember anything. Who's trying to kill you? What happened here?" But she wasn't listening. She was looking past him at something behind him. Then, without hesitation, she turned and bolted down the rubble-strewn street in the other direction. Computer Face turned to see what had the woman so spooked and was almost knocked on his own ass. Barreling through the remains of a bank was a man in heavy armor, or so Computer Face thought upon first glance. But as the thing got closer, banging and clanking its way forward through the rubble, he noticed its long, corrugated, spaghetti-like arms and legs ending in pincher-like claws instead of hands, connected to a huge barrel-shaped torso resembling a trash can, complete with vertical rivets positioned every several inches, with no head on top, and thought it could not possibly be a man in a suit. But there, in its gunmetal gray chest, was a window, clearly showing the head of a man, laughing hysterically. The body must have been some kind of transport mech, but it was unlike anything Computer Face had ever seen, or at least remembered, which, admittedly, was nothing at that point. He was only granted a few brief seconds to gawk at the huge contraption before it was on top of him. He tried to jump out of its path, but the looming figure, standing at least another head and shoulder length above him, stopped and turned toward him. A pair of wispy antennae raised up from the flat spot where the machine's neck should have been, and pointed two tennis ball-sized red bulbs at Computer Face. Starting at his feet, the bulbs slowly worked their way up his body. Computer Face glanced down and saw a network of red lines crisscrossing up his legs. He was being scanned. At this distance, Computer Face was able to get a closer look at the man inside the suit. He was middle-aged, with a scraggly brown beard and blue eyes. He wasn't laughing at all. In fact, he was sobbing. His eyes were wild. His complexion was yellowed, sickly. Tears streamed down his sunken-in cheeks. He looked starved. He was inside there, silently screaming. "What the fuck is going on?" Computer Face asked as the machine finished its scan. From speakers located on either side of the clear window housing the man's head, the machine, not the man inside it, said, "Secondary objective complete. Non-threat. Continue primary objective. Capture hostile organism for assimilation." With that, the huge machine stomped off on its spindly legs in the direction the black woman had run. Something was very, very wrong with this city. Computer Face took off jogging toward the man in the mech suit, naked purple cock bouncing to the left and right with each lumbering step he took. He needed to find the black woman. Ever since he'd first laid eyes on her, he couldn't shake the feeling that he'd met her somewhere before. Get off me, piece of junk! Computer Face stepped through an archway, standing alone, with both sides of the exterior wall pulverized into dust. He guessed it had been a corner convenience store, evidenced by the soda coolers strewn about the ground, their glass doors long smashed to nothing, but their logos still visible on their sides. He found the mech man and the black woman laying in what might have been the storage room, separated from the rest of the destruction by 1 4-foot-long metal wall, possibly the remains of a walk-in cooler. Mech Man was crouched atop the woman who lay on her back in the rubble, both its spindly arms wrapped around her like the tentacles of a giant octopus. Through its speakers, the mech said, "Please remain still, citizen. While your identity is confirmed, you will not be harmed. Repeat, no harm will come to you, citizen. Please relax. Struggling will only make the process more difficult." Struggling with clenched teeth, the woman with the scarred forehead managed to untangle one of her arms and reach down for her weird wand-like contraption. "Suck my clit, you cock-sucking rust bucket!" The machine continued, ignoring the insult. "Cooperation is in your utmost interest," it said, even while splaying out the claw on its wrist until both metal pieces were flat. The claw then began spinning, creating a sort of saw blade at the end of its spaghetti limb. "Identifying your citizenship is the first step toward integrating you into the Freedom to Work program. Please comply. Please comply. Please comply." Even as the machine spoke, its arms flailed around, trying to find an opening with which to strike the woman as she desperately pushed and kicked at the thin, wiry arms intertwined with her own, keeping them at bay. From the center of the swirling blade on the mech man's left hand, a small, syringe-like dart popped out, causing the woman's eyes to bulge with fear, as if she knew the needle's contents. She thrashed in earnest, freeing her arm and hip enough to reach into her belt and pull the wand free. Just as the mech man's spaghetti arm rose up to attack with its new weapon, the woman jabbed the wand into its barrel-like chest, sending a current of electricity through its entire body, causing the machine to spasm. Its arms flailed, and its voice warbled as it spoke nonsense before climbing off the woman to escape the effects of her strange device. Still jittering, it turned and saw a Computer Face watching from close by. "Please assist this retrieval unit in identifying the citizen so that we may enroll her in the Freedom to Work program." Why was the robot asking for his help? And why the hell was the man inside of it still crying? Before Computer Face could begin to answer these questions, the woman leapt to her feet and started to run out of the ruined convenience store. "Stop, citizen," the robo-man said, flinging its thin arm after her. It extended out like a lasso, tripping the woman up, sending her sprawling into the rubble. The robot's arm wound around her legs and yanked her back through broken glass, sharp pieces of concrete, and other treacherous debris. Extending the blades out to more than a foot on its other hand, the robot turned its huge saw hand to the side, lining it up next to its lasso arm, ready to slice the woman in half once it reeled her in. "Citizen is showing signs of extreme aggression. Terminate, citizen." The woman was screaming now, her back ripped to shreds by the unforgiving rubble. At the last second, before she would have been sliced up by the robot's saw, Computer Face reached out and tore the lasso arm from the robot's body with one strong tug. Sparks shot out of its stump as the loop end of the arm went slack. Falling from the woman's leg, she rolled to a stop just out of reach of its saw blades. The Robo-Man turned toward Computer Face, its headless body cocked to one side as if confused. Unit, please state your serial number. I'm not a robot, Computer Face said, winding the thin arm around his fist, creating a whip. Unit, you may be experiencing a cerebral malfunction. This unit advises you to report to the nearest forge for system analysis. This unit will...
I'm not a fucking robot!
Computer Face screamed as he flung the whip arm forward, smashing into the robot's chest, shattering the window covering the crying man's face. Unit, cease aggressive behavior. The robot's voice warbled as it stumbled around in a circle, issuing sparks and small flames as its circuitry overloaded from the attack. Now, the hysterical wails of the man inside were audible. He sounded completely insane and in a great deal of pain. Computer Face attacked again, this time whipping at the machine's legs, severing the left, causing it to collapse. Computer Face dropped the whip arm. Standing over the robot, he turned it over onto its back. The man inside squinted, causing him to momentarily stop crying for the first time since Computer Face had laid eyes on him. From the speakers, the robot continued to speak in warbled, broken sentences. Unit, please contact the nearest forge. This unit has been immobilized and will not be able to return. Communication systems have been damaged. Please send retrieval units. Computer Face picked up a hunk of concrete from the ground.
Why won't you fight me? You'll attack a woman, but not a grown man?
Before the robot could bleat out a response, Computer Face smashed the speakers, ripped off its remaining arm and leg, showering himself in sparks and oil, and then set to work prying open the barrel-like torso to free the man inside. Once he'd torn open the robot's chest, he stood up, shocked. Yellowish, clear liquid poured out from the open cavity like some sort of amniotic fluid. It stank like rotten apples and gym socks. Inside, the weeping man had no arms or legs, just twisted up stumps of flesh that looked baked like dehydrated beef. Connected to his temples and several spots on the back of his head were wires. The points of connection were swollen and red. They looked infected with yellowed pus crusted at the base of the metal wires. Inside the chest of the robot, multicolored lights flashed with maddening speed, accompanied by an awful, shrill noise that sounded like a mixture of a siren and a dying animal. On a lower frequency, a voice spoke fast and shrill, so fast that Computer Face couldn't make out what was being said. He thought he made out the words "Quiet Land," but he couldn't be sure. Computer Face lifted the man out of the ruined machine and sat his gooey, dripping form gently on the ground. The man was nothing more than a withered torso, barely weighing 50 pounds. Then Computer Face set to work, smashing the rest of the robot to bits until the lights and noise died away. That's when he heard his name for the first time.
Computer Face.
Computer Face turned around. What? The wrinkled, shriveled up man shrunk away, bracing for a blow as tears continued to stream down his wasted face. What did you call me? In a small voice, the man said,
Computer Face.
And then, a little louder, his confidence growing as blows did not come.
Computer Face! Computer Face!
He shouted the name, his cries turning to laughter until he was cackling at the top of his lungs.
Computer Face! Computer Face!
Shut up! Stop saying that! Stop it!
Computer Face grabbed the limbless man, but his eyes were rolled into the back of his head. Drool poured from his mouth. He was too far gone to reason with. Whatever fight he had left in him was gone. He closed his eyes, continuing to whisper,
Computer Face, Computer Face,
until his exhausted body finally went limp. What the fuck? Computer Face said, taking the whole weird scene in. He picked up a large piece of broken plastic window that had covered the poor man inside the robot. It was a two-way mirror. The outside allowed the man to be seen. The inside showed him a reflection of himself. Computer Face hesitated and then slowly began to turn the mirror side toward himself, toward his own face. Then, two things happened simultaneously. A deep, rumbling boom, like the sound of thunder, pulsed through the ground. Computer Face thought it was an earthquake at first, but it came and went too fast. The second thing was a cough and a moan from behind him. The woman was waking up. Boom. It happened again. Boom. Again. Footsteps. Gigantic. Footsteps. Can you walk? Computer Face asked, dropping the hunk of mirror, turning his attention toward the injured woman. Her back was a mess from being dragged through the rubble. She winced and sat up. I don't think so. She looked at the mangled remains of the robot and the now dead husk of the man trapped inside.
You saved my life. I don't understand.
Computer Face walked over to her, offering his hand to help her off the ground. Lady, I don't remember who I am, how I got here, or why the world is suddenly full of robots with people stuffed inside of them. Forgive me if I don't have a lot of sympathy. Now, do you want to get going, or what? I'll carry you if I have to, but I expect there's more things like that out here. It's best we find shelter as fast as possible. She looked up. Utterly confused, her eyes panned up and down his body, resting on his big, purple dick. They're really starting to get the anatomy down. I'll give them that. Computer Face suddenly realized he'd been naked this entire time. He looked down at his dick. Purple wasn't his favorite color, but in contrast with the yellow tint of the rest of his body, it sure made his cock look huge. Is all he managed to get out before she jammed her wand against his balls and kipped up to her feet in one fluid motion. Then she took off running in a full sprint. She'd been faking the extent of her injuries. She was one tough bitch. Computer Face's hulking body dropped like a rock, spasming for several minutes as the electric current made its way through him. All the while, the steady boom, boom, boom got louder as if something massive was getting closer and closer. When Computer Face could finally move his arms of his own volition, he immediately grabbed his balls to make sure they were still attached to his body. The black woman's magnet weapon packed a powerful punch. After affirming that the boys still rested in their sack, Computer Face climbed to his feet and dusted off his naked body.
Feisty little bitch, huh?
he said to the limbless corpse still drooling from its mouth. The rumbling was practically deafening now. Chunks of the crumbling buildings began to fall, and dust kicked up all around him with each thunderous boom. Computer Face walked toward the sound, convinced that whatever was stomping through the ruined city held the answers to the weird robot apocalypse he woke up in. He stopped, turned around, and fetched the mech man's dismembered arm. When he got to the street corner, he turned south. The landscape opened up there, away from the tall, empty buildings. Everything on the south side of the city had already been pulverized. It was utter destruction. Civilization in total ruin. That's when he saw it, vaguely at first, like a giant shadow looming in the smog and dust that hung in the air like a thick yellow fog. And then, as it continued its path northwest, he saw the giant machine in full view. It looked like a huge pasta strainer with thin, spidery legs jutting even further up into the air, nearly blotting out the sun. From the middle of the bowl, a single crane-like arm stuck up and out further still than the spider legs, tipped with a three-pronged pincher at the end. It must have been some kind of earth-moving or construction vehicle, but it towered another story above the tallest of the crumbling city skyscrapers. And it was coming right his way. A light rain began to fall as the mega machine neared, drawing it closer into focus, allowing Computer Face to make out a few more details. It was shot through with red and blue wiring and had several points of articulation on each limb, as well as what looked like a rotating axis separating the lower limbs from the basket-like cage that had looked like a metal strainer from further away. Two enormous smokestacks jutted up and out from either side of the basket, resembling the eyes of a metallic crab. The stacks bellowed, and huge plumes of acrid smoke rolled out into the air, causing a distinct darkening of the sky. The mega robot changed directions, heading down a direct path toward the area Computer Face now occupied. It was maybe 200 yards away when the rain intensified. Computer Face finally unlocked his gaze from the machine, only then noticing the reddish tint the world around him had taken. Confused, he looked down at his own arms and hands. That's when he heard the screams. There was no rain. His body, the street, and the remains of the buildings next to him were speckled with a thin layer of blood. The mega robot stomped to within 100 yards, bringing its huge basket and the hundreds of people trapped within into clear focus. Boom! 50 yards. It was some kind of detainment vehicle, but the top of the cage was open for some reason. Computer Face could see terrified people trying to climb the metal fence, but more of those smaller, man-sized machines with people trapped inside were also in there with the prisoners, yanking them back down into the bowl, herding them toward huge, rotating blades in the center of the bowl. They were knocking people down into them by the dozens. What the fuck is that? Computer Face said aloud, stuck to his spot, in complete awe of the skyscraper-sized torture device. That's the Thresher. Computer Face whipped around, completely taken by surprise by another person's voice next to him. He'd been so wrapped up watching the giant machine, he never heard anyone approach him. A man in a brown mask grabbed his arm and yanked him through a doorway into a tall building, just as one of the Thresher's titan legs stomped into the street where they'd only just stood.
motherfuckers. Are you listening to the Watching with Strangers podcast with me, Kevin Strange, and Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult movies?
Hi, I am.
Are you? What are you listening to, man? What are the kind of movies they're missing by not listening to the show?
Oh, man. Monster Squad?
Monster Squad? The Fred Decker-directed Monster Squad?
Absolutely. We've got Nards.
Yes, we do have Nards. What else?
Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, people probably haven't heard of. Try to pick something
that they've heard of. What's their problem? Listen to the podcast. Over the Top.
Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone? What else?
Out for Justice.
With Steven Seagal? Guys, you're missing these epic 80s movie reviews. They're not all from the 80s, but some of them are, and you should be listening to it. Now fuck off.
Oh, hey.
We're back.
Yeah.
Yay, computer face.
So that was Computer Face Part 2. We got to meet our first retriever unit. Yep. We got to meet the as-of-yet-unnamed black girl in the story that kicks the shit out of Computer Face, zaps him in the balls with her... I figured that these soldiers in the machine war, they wouldn't fight with regular bullets because, you know, you're fucking shooting at robots. But if you were using electromagnetic bolt throwers, that you would have an opportunity to disable robots with actual guns as opposed to shooting bullets and doing hardly any damage to the machines. So I have these electromagnetic weapons in this story that I think are cool. She uses one against Computer Face and zaps him in his big old purple dick.
Because you like the big old purple dick. Starting to become a trend.
Listen, I've had 18 books.
There's only like two, three mentions of big purple dicks.
Two big purple dicks out of 18 books. And you're going to hang those big purple dicks around my neck.
Well, let's see. You're going to have a Jorak collection that features somebody with a big purple dick.
Yeah.
So that's like three stories, and then you're playing another Jorak book. That's four stories.
They don't all have his big purple dick in them.
You're
featured.
Thinking about his big purple dick all the time.
Maybe I am. Aurelius' old purple dick. Maybe Aurelius and Computer Face Harry are the same character. Remember, the souls of these characters from different parts of the universe are intertwined.
How you depressed me. I was hoping my soul got a bigger dick in the next universe. Now I'm just going to have the same color, same size dick.
Anyway.
I hope there's like some fat wastewater worker somewhere with a big old dick.
So again, I wanted to write a story where these robots live on the tortured essence of humans. And we get this, Harry actually tears this maniacally crazed, insane husk of a human out of the middle of this retriever unit, and it turns out he's got no arms and no legs, and he's just having these like flashing lights and like these words all screamed at him inside of the thing, just torturing the fuck out of him, powering the robot. It's pretty hideous.
Mm-hmm.
Hideous way to go.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
Well, like parts that we'll discuss later more than that, but that's kind of a neat concept.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the buddy system, right?
Yeah, the buddy system. Oh,
buddy system. So we've talked about the buddy system here on the show in the past. The buddy system is a few years back, I think he's an older fella, too. Some poor old guy who became frustrated by continuously being rejected from horror short, small press horror markets. Eventually, and seeing the same people get published over and over and over again, and see them all yucking it up and having a good old time on social media together, just being buddies, he finally freaked out. And I don't remember if it was a blog post or if he just wrote a Facebook status, but I mean, he was kind of a douchebag about it. He claimed that his writing, he was mad. He said, "My writing is better than all of your fucking writing, and my shit has never been published because I'm not part of the buddy system." And they have mocked this guy and ridiculed this guy and continued to use the term buddy system for years afterwards. And if you remember, we talked about a recent article by a chick that that wrote the Unbuddy System article. And we sort of dismantled that point by point.
How to be a better writer but not do anything with writing.
Yeah, the article was about how to be a better writer without ever once addressing writing at all. It was all about how to be the cool kid at the party.
It's like how to sharpen your sword, but you never mention how to actually sharpen a sword.
Yeah. This is, but talk, but it does talk about how to impress the king and the queen during the dinners, and how to
talks about how polish you got to polish the sword, but never actually sharpen it.
Yeah. So, anyway, some of these authors have gotten together. Some of the buddy system, the small press buddy system, have gotten together, and they've published a book called Alien Bug Hunt. We've talked about that book here on the show. We were both really excited about this book because. Your favorite author.
But this is the Alien Bug Hunt is not put out by them, is it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Because it apparently was licensed by the people who made Aliens, right?
Yes.
They're part of this.
I don't know if they just... Let's see what's going on here. We could have talked about this. Let's see. Because I have the page brought up here, but it's just on the reviews. So, it is officially licensed. This is an official 20th Century Fox release, officially licensed, but it was put out by someone called Titan Books. Okay. I'm not sure who Titan Books is. So, your question is it published by the Buddy System, or does it just happen to feature all Buddy System authors because the editor of the of said anthology happens to be one of the ringleaders of the Buddy System. Could be the former, could be the latter. I'm not sure about what Titan Books is. But the point being that your favorite author of all time, right?
Oh,
your favorite author of all time. You've got a tattoo from this fellow, Scott Sigler.
Yes, I do.
He's got a,
I see it have to be my favorite since...
He's the only author you have a tattoo from?
Tattooed on me.
And then, of course, one of my favorite authors, Brian Keene. Is featured in here, and he wrote a story about my buddy Mike Lombardo. Like he used Mike's likeness in the book, and that's really neato. That's really badass. And Lombardo was super excited about this book because of that, and I was excited about it because I also like Scott Sigler. You're a big fan of Scott Sigler. I'm a big fan of Brian Keene's writing, if not his personality so much. I mean, I like the guy as a friend, but he's a dickhead, man.
Mm-hmm.
Can be. I guess the best thing to say is he can be a dickhead. And all of his fangirls who obsessively listen to the show are now running back to him, telling him that we're talking shit. But I'm not really talking shit. It's complicated, you know. People don't always have to high five each other every day on the internet to be friends, and we don't have to agree on things. Like I said, one of my best friends on the internet that I've known for like 17 years. Is a big social justice warrior, and I still like her.
Mm-hmm.
I can have friendships and not agree with people's ideas. We're friends for other reasons. I'm friends with this girl because of her sense of humor and because of the things we like in common. And ironically, the Xenomorphs are her favorite movie monster, and Alien is her favorite movie. So she may have picked up this book, which would be unfortunate because it turns out that this Alien Bug Hunt book is a big old piece of fucking steaming shit. Did you know that, Jeremy?
No, I didn't.
It's you wouldn't know it by seeing a lot of the phony 5-star reviews that have come in from the Buddy System's fanboys and fangirls. But there's some real problems with this anthology. Are you still there looking up Titan Books?
I'm actually going through the reviews right now.
Okay, good.
Weird, so, there's only 27 reviews for a major release, so...
That's what I'm saying. I think they may have just licensed it. I really don't think that... Because 20th Century Fox does their... I believe they do their official Alien books through Dark Horse's novel imprint. And I don't think that's Titan Books.
Well, I know that's who they do their comics, too.
No, but they also do their... Because the comic books get adapted into novels. So there's... For every one of those comic book series, there's also a novel. And those, I believe, are through Dark Horse. I don't know. Anyway, so I start hearing rumors and murmurs about this book before it was even officially released from the pre-order folks, that there were some real problems with this anthology. Not the least of which is the quality of some of the works, that they contradict official canon, which really bothers people when you're going to officially license a property and then not do that property's canon justice. But then there's also a lot of complaints that this book a lot of these stories don't even feature xenomorphs, that they just feature maybe one or two characters from the movie Aliens, but have them fighting different types of monsters or whatever. But the biggest, most damning issue with this book is at least one of the stories actually has the editor's notes still left in to the with the text. So you're trying to read a story and suddenly it's like this really angry note, like, and Lombardo posted these screenshots, and it's like all caps, "No, aliens take, you know, such and such hours to gestate. That's just not enough time," 2 exclamation points. And what's bizarre is this thing the editor's complaining about is still in the book. So the editor's notes weren't I don't know. It's all messed up. It's like the last editor draft is what got published, not the rewritten, not the last rewrite. It's like the wrong fucking PDF got sent off to the printer and put into this book. And the problem with that, aside from, you know, shoddy editing from the editor's work, it's literally his job. He's got one job, and that's to make sure that this book goes to print without things like that in it. But it harkens back to this fucking buddy system. Jeremy Daniels,
mm-hmm.
do you want to talk about some of these reviews real quick?
The reviews don't look good.
Except for the phony 5-star ones from the buddy system fans.
That's what I'm talking about. Every 5-star review just doesn't seem like, we'll give the shortest one I found that's a 2-star. Loved Alien movies except Alien 3. One concise paragraph and it's a 2-star. You get to a 5-star. Oh, you know, these people love this book. Loved every story. Great book. Those
5 stars.
5 stars, yeah.
Those are those, and I've ranted about this for years. Those are those disingenuous 5-star reviews from the writer's friends. They think that they're helping. Those things are so, it's so easy to see through the phony 5-star reviews that people, there's no reason to even look at 5-star reviews on Amazon because they're almost all phony. I've always said, look at the 3-star reviews. The 3-star reviews are the most honest. And then look at the 1-star reviews to find out what exactly turned people off. And if that doesn't turn you off, then you're good. Then you got a book on your hands to go buy. I always base my opinions, if the subject matter or the author alone doesn't sell me on a book, mm-hmm. and I have to go to the reviews, I go to the 3 stars and the 1 stars. If the 1 stars don't scare me off and the 3 stars are fair, I'll go ahead with the purchase. You got something else there you want?
Some good one from writers I always know and love, and some good ones from writers I didn't know before but do now. A must-read Aliens and Colonial Marines fan.
5 stars?
Bingo, 5 stars.
5 stars. So a lot of these 5-star reviews don't even seem like they were from people who read the books.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the 2 stars and the 1 stars are literally calling them out for having this shoddy editing in this book and having, you know, a bunch of stories that don't even feature. It's a book called Bug Hunt, right?
Yeah.
And Bug Hunt is a line from not Hicks, but the guy played by Bill Paxton. What was his name? Anyway, is it the line is something da 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 da, or is this just another Bug Hunt? And that's what the name of this book is based on, that quote. So you would hope that it would be a Bug Hunt, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought. And I was going to pre-order this book for the Sigler and Keen stories, and I held off. And then these awful reviews started coming in, and now I don't even want to own this book because it pisses me off so much. This is the problem with this fucking buddy system that they all cling to and love so much and talk about. All you got to do is just be a nice person, and when an editor tells you to change something, just go ahead and do it because you don't want to be perceived as a bad guy. What ends up happening is these people will lazily publish each other in books. And not bother with any real solid editing, and not bother with any quality control, because they're way more preoccupied with making sure that they publish their friends' stories than they are with publishing good stories. And how many times have I ranted on this fucking show about judging authors by the merit of their work? This is a book that I was excited about, that you were excited about, that is a piece of shit because the buddy system doesn't care about the merit of an author's work. And some of the authors in the story are good authors. But when they're put up with, when they're put against an editor who's their buddy and can't be objective about the quality of the work and can't apparently do the simple job of editing, you end up with a piece of shit for the audience, man, for the fans, for the consumer. The consumer gets fucked by the buddy system every fucking time. Fuck that buddy system and fuck those people who encourage it. Fuck it. Writing literature, fiction, it's not a fucking popularity contest. And when you turn it into a popularity contest, you fuck the fans because they don't get high quality fucking work. Period. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about Titan Publishing or exactly how that is. But I mean, to not edit it right, there's two reviews that mentioned the editing was so piss poor that there's no excuse for a collection of short stories. That definitely seems like a fail, but I can't even find Titan Publishing on the internet.
So they're probably just, it's just a small press, whatever. Maybe the editor's imprint. Maybe he just bought the...
They took their site down for a little bit because they were getting shit about
it. Well, that's the thing. In one social media post about this that was posting examples of this fucking atrocious editing, the editor kept getting pinged. He kept getting tagged in these posts, and he never said a word publicly. He never explained why it was so bad or whether it was going to be fixed. Is there going to be a version of this that comes out that's the corrected editing? I mean, he won't talk about
it.
The only
thing I could suggest and say about this is Sean Ferrari needed a new job. I mean, I get a surprise. I still haven't heard anything about him moving back or anything like that. But he may need a new job, and he's a great editor. I mean, we have found a couple of mistakes. He's not a perfect editor by any means, but he does do quality editing.
So next time you're going to do an alien anthology, call Sean Ferrari.
No, our next anthology, we're shooting that fucking dog. He won't do that if that's
your next one. Sean Ferrari doesn't appreciate the dogs being harmed in fiction or in movies. He gets real upset about it. He's a frequent visitor of doesthedogdie.com, which tells you if a dog is harmed in a feature film or not. Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It sucks. I don't know how Sigler got in on the buddy system because he seems to be fairly away from it. But maybe Titan Books does something. I don't know what they would publish or be associated with him with. Maybe if they just asked him because somebody there's a fan of his too. I don't know.
Because he does hardcore sci-fi, so.
Yeah, but out of all those reviews, I didn't see any single one of the Sigler fans.
No.
Even mention him. There was quite a few 5-star reviews that mentioned specific authors for some reason.
Yep.
I've done my fair share of Amazon reviews, and I try not to, like in anthologies, call out certain people, especially in the first paragraph. It does seem a little suspect, but I mean, if they focus on their craft, I'm sure their editor notes wouldn't be in there.
Yep.
I really don't have anything to say about it. Still kind of blown away by dealing with some of these people and their total lack of their ability to actually fess up as human beings and accept their mistakes. And I don't mind you championing your victories if you do accept your mistakes. If not, I really don't even want to deal with them. I know certain other talent in the Strangeville universe is embroiled in a quasi-feud, I guess, with some people, but I don't know. I prefer fighting, you know, real men that will actually admit if they get beat.
Jeremy Daniel, the quote of the show, I prefer fighting real men. I love it.
And when I say real men, I don't mean to be, you know, gender-specific.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You'll fight women who identify as men?
Punch a bitch in the face. There's a new quote.
That's what we got to do, right? If you want to punch women, you gotta get them to call themselves a man. Just say you're a man. Just be a man for 5 minutes.
No.
Just identify as a male for 5 minutes.
We live in a climate where we cannot discriminate based on gender.
Oh, okay.
So we're being bad by being guys that wouldn't hit a woman. So I guess that's what our next evolution is. Punching bitches in the face.
For equality?
Yeah. For equality.
Bitches, bitches for equality.
Yeah. Next rally. We just need to go there and start thumping.
You heard it here first. All right. Until next week. Computer Face Part 3. We get things get real weird as Computer Face meets up with a gang of RDA military personnel. And they don't like what they find when they find Computer Face.
A big, bulky Computer Face guy. Can't tell if he's a robot or a human.
Right. So. Till then, gang. Remember to keep
reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.